Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Thank you all for coming. I'd just like to introduce Martin. This is Martin Pang, who is our new marketing director who's helped put this communication together and now gets the joy of sitting through it on a number of occasions. Okay, so what we're here to talk to you about the results to the 31st of December. Just on the second page there, I just thought I'd talk a little bit about what Eagle Eye is for. We talk about our mission being to transform marketing. And the way that you do that, or the way that we believe you do that, is by bridging online to offline. Everybody lives in an online digital world, but stores and restaurants and bars and clubs are digital black holes. And in order to compete going forward, those venues, those sites have to be digitally connected in order to have half a chance of competing against digital pure plays. We enable that. We are, in effect, the connection guys. That's what we do. But, you know, the point about the connection is you've got to get people to identify themselves at the till so you know who they are. You know who they are and you know what they bought. If you know who they are, what they bought, when and where they bought it, you then have half a chance of sending them a sensible next best offer. And you get to that next best offer or that next best message through data analytics, and of course, increasingly, you get to that through AI. So we do that through promotions, through loyalty, through apps, through subscriptions, through gift, increasingly through a wider product set, and we describe ourselves as being one platform, but many products. And then finally, our mantra mainly to our customers is if you are going to compete going forward, you need to be digitally enabled and data-driven. And, you know, the simple question is, who doesn't want to know who their customers are? The answer at the moment is quite a lot of people are happy not to, but that will be increasingly a problem in terms of being able to compete. I then thought I'd just reprise the investment case. The market is enormous. You know, billions of promotions, billions of dollars of loyalty, billions going through on gift cards. And so relatively tiny increases in market share for Eagle Eye are many, many millions of dollars. And so, you know, we are operating in a very big market. We are operating in a market that is going digital, but actually that huge market has been rather slow to go digital and should accelerate. The retail industry is under pressure, as we all know. And as I've just argued and said, in order to compete, you need to have these tools going forward. Customers are digitally connected. They expect to be digitally connected to you. And particularly, most businesses that are going to be successful going forward will probably be what is called omnichannel. So they'll have an e-commerce offering and they'll have a physical store offering. And you need to link the two things together. Because if you don't, you browse online, you shop in the store and you buy it, and then you go back online and it advertises you the thing you bought last week in the store. And you just think these people are idiots. Don't they know I've just bought this damn thing? And so you have to link the two things together. More prosaically, what we do is we make an offer perform online and in store in the same way. Because many of these businesses are siloed, an offer that's in the stores cannot either has to be set up separately to work in e-commerce, so you have to set all your offers up twice, which is an administrative nightmare, and also the risk is they slip out of line with each other. So our platform enables you to bring your channels of your business together, set the offer up once, and it applies in a single way in a multi-channel format. And then there is, finally, there is some sign that people who've got this strategy sorted are starting to outperform their competitors. Now, clearly, I wouldn't claim it's the only reason why they're doing well, But people like Loblaw, JD Sports, Greggs actually would be another. These are people who have a good, well understood, well thought through digital strategy. They also happen to be businesses that are doing rather well. In addition to those on the next slide, in addition to those strong market drivers, we have a proven technology, I think, and that can be seen by the customer base that we illustrate there. Our recurring revenues are growing, and we'll talk to you about that. We have a well-managed cost base, and we are moving towards EBITDA profitability. We have sufficient funds to support our growth strategy, and the business has an experienced management team and an experienced board. So that summarizes, for us at least, the reason why people should think about owning stock in this business. In terms of the summary of the half, we've had a positive half delivering against our stated objectives, and I will remind you what those are and how we've done in a minute. We've had some blue chip wins, Waitrose just after the period, and Burger King, which is in a new sector. It's our first win in QSR. We'll talk about sector development. We do have a very high level of recurring revenue, a massive increase in transaction volumes, and we'll talk about that. You know, we are a business that is physically scaling very fast. We've continued to innovate the product, and that enables us to apply digital to solutions to more of the issues in that very big market that I talked about at the beginning. And I think I outlined or started to talk about the last time we met this notion of running our business in a better, simpler, cheaper way. And we're going to talk to you about our work with moving to the Google Cloud, which is a great example of that. Lucy's now going to talk a little bit about the key financial highlights and the business model before we return to our delivery of the strategy.
Great, thank you, Tim. So I just want to take the opportunity, first of all, to give you the key financial KPIs. In the period, the revenue has increased by 30% overall, going from 6.2 million to 8 million in the half. And we've done that by delivering on a customer strategy of winning new customers, getting them to transact on the platform, and then getting them to deepen with new products that we have. Underneath the bonnet, the air platform revenue, which represents 7.5 of that 8 million, grew by 41%. So the strategic, now very large part of the business is growing at a much greater rate. That has been impacted this period by SMS, which only represents 6% of the business now. And that revenue has declined. But as we go forward, the impact of SMS will become lesser and lesser. The next KPI is around recurring revenue. We are a SaaS business model, really important KPI. Recurring revenue for the period was 72%. That reflects revenue coming from license from the platform and also transactional revenue as well. So the overall growth from a pounds value has grown by 23%. And very much that element has been impacted by the success we've had with our big tier ones as they're moving to the next phase of their contract. Churn was a stat that we reported for the first time last year. Net churn for the period was 0.4% of value. It was 1.5% this time last year. A very small stat anyway, but reduced by that 1.1 percentage points. If you add on to that the concept around our renewals that happened in the period, where we had significant renewals for some of our F&B clients and other retail clients, it really illustrates to us the relevance of the product the second or the third time round, saying it's a really, really sticky product. Cash at the end of the period, we were into our facility of 1.8 million. Two things I really want to highlight to you here. That was a cash burn of just over 2 million for the half. The burn of cash for 2018 split 3 million in the first half and 0.4 million in the second half. We have this trend where the first half of the business, we burn more cash than we do in the second half. We'd expect that to continue into 2019. And with the Barclays facility of 5 million that we have, we've got enough cash and facility to deliver our existing plans. The next section is the business model. I wanted to sort of address up front some of the questions that people have asked me over the last 12 months, give a little bit more clarity on what the business model is and how we operate. Our revenue breaks down into three component parts. One, a one-off implementation fee that we charge to deliver on our products. Then, in terms of recurring revenue, it's license, access to the platform, and transaction fees as well. So if you split that down for the half to the end of December 2018, that splits 2.2 million for implementation fees, which is about 28% of revenue. Licenses was 2.9 million, 36%, and transactional fees as well were 2.9 million, also 36%. That's sort of roughly the same shape that we're sort of seeing period on period. To understand transaction fees a little bit more, you've got to understand how the product breaks down into its different component parts. So we have three main products in terms of the revenue going through the platform to understand. We had a gift offering, we have a promotions offering, and we have a loyalty offering. If we take gift to start with, where we see the average value of a transaction going through our platform is around about £50 for a consumer spending or buying a gift card, there's an intrinsic link always between the customer value that they're getting and what we can charge as a price per transaction. So if you've got this £50 gift card going through our platform, we can charge around about 10 to 30 pence per transaction for that gift transaction. For us, they're very low volumes going through the platform compared to promotions and loyalty. So we had about 1 million transactions going through for gift in the period. When we move on to promotions, my example of a promotion is, say, 50 pence off a six-pack of Coke. There you can charge somewhere between 0 and 5 pence. You know, there's got to be that value exchange coming through for promotions. And there we're seeing just about 150 million transactions going through the platform. So a massive swing in terms of volumes going through the platform for promotions. Then when we move into loyalty, which is a new service that's come on board as a result of predominantly Loblaws using the platform, we're now talking about, from a consumer perspective, you're getting an earn and burn of points in terms of what you get in your wallet. You've got to receive more points in your wallet compared to having that one coupon in your hand for the 50p of Coke. So there, the price we can charge for a loyalty transaction is parts of pence rather than being at that 0 to 5p because of the value exchange. So in this period, we're seeing this massive increase in volumes, over 400% in volumes of transactions going through the platform. But that growth is very much coming from our loyalty area because it's a new product where there is a lower price per transaction. So hopefully that will give you a bit of clarity on where we're going with those metrics. The next slide is to try and give you an illustrative example of a contract lifecycle. We did an exercise to look at our top 20 customers to give a flavour of really how the revenue, the value comes into our business. So if we take those concepts I've talked about on the first slide, if we take, first of all, the implementation period, this represents the shape really of a tier one, but it can be scaled back for a tier one, tier two customer as well, but the shape remains the same. So implementation happens, implementation period will range from being months if we're talking about an app implementation to years if we're talking about a loyalty replatforming. So we charge an implementation fee for the period that we're delivering in. We start charging license fee from day one, but on day one it's scaled back and it steps up once you go live in terms of increased value we can charge for that license. Then in terms of transactions, as you would expect, transaction revenue starts flowing through once you go live. And actually what we see, as Tim illustrated before, was once customers go past that digital Rubicon, we see they get it and they use it more. And what we naturally see is a growth of transactions coming through the platform where they see more and more use cases of how they can apply our technology. So how does that translate? after that is we see typically after a year after go live, our customers take another product from us. So it could be another product, so they may have promotions and take loyalty, or actually they could take another use case. So for example, they take earn and burn of points, and they may then use loyalty capability in, to use just for their staff segment. That would be an additional service that they would take from us. So a pound of win in year one, we see on average getting to times three by year three. So you can see that there's a nice growth, and this is taken from actual analysis we've done on our top 20 customers. The thing that I don't reflect in the graph is around the opportunity with brands. We're having some nice success. I think I've talked to you about this before, where we use our F&B network to put brand campaigns through to reach a bigger audience. This is great, having good success and good transaction in this field. Where we are not so far making any revenue from is around tier one. So this really does represent an opportunity for us going forward. So that hopefully gives you a little bit more clarity on the business model and what a typical contract should look for us. I'll pass back to Tim for the strategic update.
Just to remind you, our strategy has four elements, one of which Lucy has just touched on, which is this notion of winning new customers, getting them to the transact on the platform, and then deepening our offer or the products that we sell to them. The second element is that what we do is we develop our product so that actually we are more applicable and have more use cases to that massive market opportunity that I highlighted at the very start of this presentation. So just to remind you, the development of the wallet meant that we could move into the loyalty space. Prior to that, we were a digital promotions business. We didn't do loyalty. The loyalty space is many billions of dollars, and we've moved into there, and other examples we'll come back to. We can then take that and take it to new geographies, and we can then take that and take it to adjacent sectors. And so those are the four things that we're trying to do in order to keep driving the growth of the business going forward. Looking at the first part of that, in terms of win, transact, and deepen, we had some nice wins during the period or just after. So we won Burger King during the period, which was our first QSR. And just after, we won Waitrose, so another blue chip tier one. That was great to link with the John Lewis client opportunity that we already had. We've also won a business called Ibiza Rocks, which is a hotel bar venue operation in Ibiza. And basically, when you visit those their different venues, you'll be able to get points, and they will be able to market to you through the app and say, why don't you come to this beach bar? Why don't you come to this restaurant for dinner? And so on and so forth. And I think there's a big opportunity in venue marketing, destination marketing. You know, you don't need the Orlando app except when you're in Orlando. And then when you're there, you really do need it. And so I think there is an opportunity for us to replicate this for other people. Hopefully it's just a first. In terms of transaction, there are two ways of cutting this. The first is that the platform is up 414% in terms of issuances and redemptions. So it is really operating at scale now. The good thing about that is that enables us to have sensible conversations with the largest retailers in the world and demonstrate that we can run their programs. And then the second thing is that we've expanded the audience network. Lucy talked about this a bit earlier on. You know, one of the uses of digital marketing is to drive people into my venues, into my restaurants, into my shops. And one of the ways that you do that is you do it through audience networks. So Groupon would probably be the largest and most famous, but there are loads of them. And we have signed up One2, Saga, Kids Pass, Blue Card. Blue Card is the one for the emergency services people in this country. And so what we are doing is we are digitally connecting to all these different audience partners. And we can then say to a brand, we've got all these audience partners, you come in with us, we can pass your offer out through them. And if you want 100,000 redemptions, we'll get you 100,000 redemptions back into your venues. And that I think is will be a growing part of the business going forward. And then in terms of deepen, the important figure there is we've started to talk about like for like, and that growth is 36%. Now, the total growth of the air platform is 41%. So you can see that in this year, the vast proportion of the growth was driven by growth of existing customers. That was particularly our major tier ones kicking on and going live. In terms of new products and innovation, the first thing, which I've sort of already alluded to, is this is now a platform that operates at scale. 3,000 transactions per second, 150 million personalised offers per week. Loblaw have 18 million customers on their programme, and that's big. Yeah? And so that means that we are a serious candidate when tier ones are considering either to go into this space or whether they need to refit their legacy systems, which are going to be about 20 years old, onto a new modern contemporary platform. The second point was the digital wallet, which, as we say, we launched for Loblaw. That enables us to do loyalty and do loyalty at scale. That enables us to have a conversation with these tier ones. The other thing is what it enables us to do is we've turned AIR, our platform, into an acronym, which is Acquire, Interact, Retain. Now, the digital wallet bit is the retain bit. The promotions bit are the acquire, and apps, but also emails, whatever, are the interact bit. So that we have this ability to offer products right the way across the marketing mix. One platform, but you can go everything from getting new customers to rewarding your most loyal. We thought we'd talk a little bit about the Eagle Eye app. For those of you that came to the Capital Markets Day, we talked about it there. We've got 2.4 million users. We've got more than that now, but this is what we had then. 130% increase. So it's big and it's growing. The remarkable thing about apps is the redemption levels that you get from pushes on an app. And we're seeing, depending upon the month, anything across all of our apps, anything between sort of 35 to 55% redemptions. Those are very, very big. You know, 55%, that's a million redemptions that are being driven by Eagle Eye apps. If you try to get a million redemptions through the sun, it will cost you millions. I mean, because you're comparing to a product that redeems, you know, normal issuance redeems at about a level of about 1% to 5%. And this is redeeming at 55%. So it's getting on for 10 times more effective than other channels. We've had some good wins. We've got 11 Mitchells and Butler brands launched in the period. Immo car washes, actually back to the point about adjacent sectors. You know, Immo car washes our app started in the UK and is now, they're rolling it out across Europe, Hungary, France, Germany to come, and a couple of others. Some good news there, and we've developed that product and repackaged it up so that it's a bit easier to sell. Ditto Eagle Eye Gift. Eagle Eye Gift historically was a digital proposition. You know, you've got a website where you could go and you could buy a digital gift and off you go. But the truth is that there is still legacy plastic card gift and being able to do the Black Hawk B2C and all those things, you know, the end you see when you go to your supermarket or whatever. And also B2B, a site where you can buy 50 cards and give them to employees. To do gift properly, you need all that stuff. So what we've done is we've built that out and we've repackaged it so that we are now really a full-service gift provider. We've won two restaurants with that new product. The product is quite seasonal, and basically people sort of panic summer, early autumn in order to have themselves ready for Black Friday and Christmas. So that will come through. The next thing I just wanted to talk about on the product side was we're moving to Google Cloud. So at the moment, we run our business on Rackspace data centers, but we are in a process working with Rackspace, but also Google Cloud, to move to the cloud. That is our lead better, simpler, cheaper initiative. It's better because it gives us access to Google's tools and technology. It starts to give you access to their AI to look at and use with your data. Clearly, they are the performance masters in terms of speed and resilience and security. So, you know, we get access to those. It's simpler because we have one platform across the world, one set of scripts across the world. You know, it just makes the thing easier to do. And it's cheaper because it's so much more flexible. You know, our data centers sit there with tin lying idle to cope with Loblaw's Thursday peak. Thursday is when they send out the vast majority of their 150 million personalized offers, and there's a massive hit on the system when that happens. In the cloud, the way that that works is you sit with the level of resource that you need, and as this extra demand comes and hits, it scales. And it scales for as long as you need it, and then when you don't need it, it goes back down again. The other thing that it offers, sort of equally germanely, is the ability to move into new geographies much faster. You know, when we went into Canada, we had to find two data centers in North America, physical buildings, space within the buildings, engineers, wires, tin, all that stuff. Now, literally, you sit on your laptop and you call up a data center in the right region, you write all your scripts from here over to here to put them into that data center, and it starts going. And if it weren't for integrating the client, you can literally do it in hours. By integrating the client, you can do it in a matter of days, a couple of weeks, whereas bringing a data center up in the old world is months. So it's a completely different thing. Will make a significant difference to our business. Where we are in the program is clearly we have to take all our clients with us. They have to give it their blessing, which they have all done, and we have to do it in a rigorous and planned way so that we don't have any glitches. Where we are at the moment is that our test environment in the UK is now in the cloud. And that's the first stage, and people can work with it there. And then progressively, over the course of the next year or so, we will move the entire business and all geographies into the cloud. In terms of new geographies, I've talked a bit about how we, you know, we have this relevance for tier ones. I've talked about the what we're doing in terms of repositioning our apps and gift to make them easier to sell and easier to understand. We continue to focus on Canada because we've got an operational team in Canada which we can leverage if we can sell some more stuff around Loblaw. And we're exploring new markets, particularly Australia and New Zealand, where we have a general manager and a sales guy. And then we support the rest of that from the UK at the moment. And I'm going down there in about 10 days' time. But they're building a nice pipeline down there. In terms of new sectors, I mean, I think the important thing is, if you go back to my introductory comments, Eagle Eye is relevant to any omnichannel business, in other words, any business that has an online and an offline manifestation, or any business that just has shops of any sort. So Immo Car Wash being, you know, just to give you an example of a business that you wouldn't necessarily think that would be a leader in digital marketing, the people who wash your car, but actually they are. So QSR is an area that we've looked at. We've won Burger King.
Sorry, what is QSR?
Quick service restaurants, I apologise. So very related to food and beverage, just faster. I think the difference is you order at a counter rather than get it brought to a table is I think the differentiator. Leisure and hospitality, I've talked about Ibiza Rocks. But we've also been looking and having some conversations with food service companies. And, you know, that breaks down into three big, you know, big office complexes, thousands of people in an office environment who should be a captive market, except you don't know who they are and you can't get them in and you only get about 50% of them. Universities and sports stadium. And we've been doing some work in all of those areas. Because if you think about it, you know, you go to the game, and again, it's back to this app point. The Emirates Stadium app is of absolutely no interest to you unless you happen to be in the Emirates Stadium, and then it's rather useful. So if you go every other week to Emirates, then you'd have it on your phone and you'd use it to get an offer on beer or go and get the latest shirt or whatever is going on. So those are that's our view on new sectors, and the good thing is we're starting to get some wins, which of course wakes people up within that sector about the This is Business Eagle. I just done something with Burger King. Maybe we should be looking at that. Lucy.
Great, thank you. So on slide 18, we've got the half 1/19 income statement. Tim's talked in quite a bit of detail about delivering on the customer strategy that's driving that 30% revenue growth. If we take it down to gross profit margin has increased to 93%. Splitting that down, air gross margin has been maintained at 97%, and SMS carries roughly a margin of 35%. So a higher level of air revenue is driving that increase in gross margin. Net operating costs were 7.7 million. That was an increase of 0.8 million for the half. Three things I want to really talk about here. First of all, that increase in the cost base has predominantly been driven by our infrastructure costs. And that has been driven by this parallel running of our current infrastructure plus Google Cloud. Net staff costs were 4.4 million. Now that represents about 57% of our total costs, so it's a chunky amount of our cost base. But importantly to understand here is that stayed at the same level as this time last year. So I think when we talked to you last time, we said that we'd invested in our people, particularly around expertise as we start going into new spaces and start growing. And what we're seeing is operational leverage as a result of that. The third point is around the product. We've invested 1.9 million into the product, same cost as we did this time last year as well. So the key things here, the revenue's grown by 30%, but the key areas we're investing in, we've managed to maintain and control, and that is then flowing down to the EBITDA loss line, where the EBITDA loss was 0.3 million for the period compared to 1.4 million for this point last year. So a big shift as we start moving towards EBITDA profitability. Below EBITDA, things to highlight here. So amortization, depreciation, share-based payments and interest was 1.6 million. That's increased by half a million for the period. Things to explain that increase. Development amortization is increased by 0.2. 0.1 facility interest, because we're using the facility in this period, and share-based payments charge of 0.2 increase as well. So that takes us down to a loss of 1.5 million compared to 2 million in half 1/18. The next slide is an illustration, hopefully in sort of manageable terms, around IFRS 15 and 16. The first thing to sort of highlight to you here is we've early adopted IFRS 16. We had to adopt IFRS 15. The reason being is we wanted to make the accounting changes as quickly as possible in one hit to make the set of comparatives as clean as possible going forward. So if I just take a moment to just explain what does that mean in terms of the first half. So the first point is around revenue. We have a difference between pre and post of 0.2 million for half 1/19. And the key reason that is because for non-tier one clients, that revenue which would typically have been recognised for the implementation period from day one of signing a contract to going live, and we recognise that on a time and material basis based on effort, that now there's no revenue recognised in that period. You have to take that revenue and you can only start recognising it when you go live, and that amount of revenue gets spread then for the remaining contract period, which is roughly on average 3 years for a contract. So we're stuck with a period where we're doing effort and we're not recognising revenue. So you're shifting revenue to the right as a result. That had an impact of 0.2 million for the period. The impact on the cost base for IFRS 15 is and 16 is twofold. So the first thing is around the cost, the incremental cost in relation to that revenue that I've just talked about. You're able to capitalise the effort, the incremental cost of those people that I've just described in terms of the implementation, plus any commission for winning those contracts, basically comes out of your cost base, goes onto your balance sheet and gets amortised below EBITDA. That accounted for 0.2 million in the period. Then in terms of IFRS 16 is about leases and capitalising lease cost. That accounted for 0.2 million for the period too. So again, that's taking 0.2 million of lease costs out of operating costs, and then it comes below the line in terms of depreciation and interest. So what does that do for our EBITDA loss? It moves it slightly from a loss, or improves it slightly from a loss of 0.5 million to a loss of 0.3. And then in terms of the impact on loss before tax, as you might expect, the difference is minimal. So you're broadly at the same point. So hopefully that gives a whistle-stop tour of IFRS 15 and 16. Okay, so the next slide gives you this breakdown of half-on-half analysis of revenue. So this is really sort of putting in a bit more colour and context the shape of the business from a revenue perspective. The first point is around this revenue coming from transactional subscriptions through the platform, which is equated to 72%. So the non-dev element continues to be high. And if we're taking that transactional element and we're looking at half one 18 versus half one 19, there's two areas really I want to highlight. Firstly is UK tier ones. You know, that's growing by 36%, very much doing more with these Asda, Sainsbury's in the UK. And then in terms of international, which is the pink block, we can see that's had growth of over 100%. And that really represents Loblaws going live in half to 18, so in February in that period. And so you've got sort of the step up of transactions and licenses coming through because they entered the go live phase of their contract. SMS reduction of 0.3, the only category that went down, which we've explained. Going forward, what would I expect? Well, I'd be expecting, due to sort of Waitrose coming on board, a step up in terms of UK tier one revenue coming through from them. I'm expecting wins to start flowing through in terms of other air. And again, we sort of see good traction, particularly in the summer, around brands. And we reported a higher price per campaign for brands as well, as we're doing more and getting more value out of our brand campaign. So again, I'd expect to see that going upwards in half two. The next slide is the cash bridge. We started the period at 0.4 million of cash. We had operating cash outflow of 0.6. If you break that down into two parts, you've got our EBITDA loss of 0.3, plus a working capital outflow of 0.3 as well. And that really reflects this massive growth in revenue as well, which is what you would expect. Then, so to your point, you've got to then take into account this capitalised cost, which is twofold now. First of all, you've got your 1 million of dev costs that we're capitalising. And secondly, the IFRS 15 and 16 implementation cost point, which again accounts for 0.3. So it's not a bit as big a number in terms of value as what we have for air, but you know, you do need to understand it to get to your cash position, which then gives us a net debt position of 1.8 million. For the period. As I stressed before, the cash burn was just over 2 million for the period, but if you look for 2018, that was 2.9 and 0.3. So you've got the seasonality, and we expect the same in 2019, so much lesser burn in half two for 2019. And the last point is around us having sufficient headroom to deliver against our existing plans. The next slide is half-on-half volumes, and really speaks to how the business has had to really operationally gear itself up to deal with this massive, massive swing in terms of volumes going through the platform. Half one 18, we were doing below 100 million of volumes. And if you look back to the same period in 17, we weren't even touching 50 million. Now for this period, we're exceeding 400 million, and we're doing that at scale, at speed. That growth, as I explained before, very much driven by these big tier ones who put huge, huge volumes through the platform. And we're seeing, as I explained, as I would expect to see when I saw you last, I was expecting a growth in half one 19, and we've seen that here. Driven by our customers doing more across the board, but particularly around Loblaws, who, when they do more stuff, it does make a massive dent in the volumes. They've added Esso, the petrol capability, onto their platform, and they did that within 6 months. So the point around Deepen that Tim had highlighted earlier, that is an example within 12 months of going live, customers seeing opportunities to do more and really using the system how it should be used. So half two, I would expect to see a continued growth in terms of transactions, but I'm not expecting another 400% growth because you've got a lot of that natural growth coming through in half one, 19.
So in terms of the outlook then, trading is in line with expectations and we expect to continue to win and deepen. We've got many more opportunities in the UK, and we've talked about Canada, Australia and New Zealand, where the pipelines are building. I hope you pick up that we are absolutely committed to this drive towards EBITDA and the the very exciting work that's going on in the Google Cloud, which not only will help ultimately in that process, but actually makes us a better business at the same time. And then finally to reiterate that we have sufficient funding to prosecute the plans that are laid out here and are out in the market. So that gives the board confidence for the year ahead. We have got 10 minutes for questions.
When the switch is completed to Google Cloud, presumably operating costs will come down because you'll reduce the rack space spend?
Correct.
Yeah, so I think the best way to understand it is we'll be parallel running into FY20. So the plan is at the moment continuing with the UK, then the US, and then the sort of new geographies. The difference from a like-for-like basis is, as Tim explained, at the moment we have to have capacity ready for peak, plus a bit more just in case there's a disaster, whereas actually we'll only be paying for what we use going forward. So you're probably going to see a trend which currently is a bit more like a step. We look to see our customers, see how profile what they might do on a real peak and then scale up for what we need. What we're going to see more of a gradual, so as revenue grows, we're going to see more of a gradual increase in costs. So yes, from a like-for-like basis, we would expect from 2021 probably to see some of these cost savings coming through.
And something slightly different. Could you just talk a little bit about how the platform works with JD Sports? I mean, most of the others seem to be sort of repeat purchases and you can bring a customer in and they keep coming back, or?
It's similar. I mean, it's just they're on a different cycle. But they have a subscription program, they have a loyalty program, so they have an app. But it's a similar thing. It's about having a relationship. And I think the way that they do it is that although the frequency of purchase is lower, so they work very hard on their content. So that JD Sport customers use the JD app for content to learn where the trends are going. You know, if you know the way these kids work, you work out what the hot trainer is, and then the next thing you find out is whether JD's got it or not, and that's, you know, that's a full time job if you're really into that space. So I think that's the way it works. So it's an app, it's subscription, it's loyalty, it's offers, it's the full suite of the interesting thing is about subscription, you know, free delivery and stuff. The thing that's great about JD is if you watch football, you'll notice two things. One is the number of relatively minor but still Premier League teams that have the JD branding on their shirt, but also the number of teams that use JD branding and it's all about JD.com, get the JD app. Just before Christmas, JD, literally in the run-up to Christmas, had 10-foot-tall iPhones on Oxford Street, cardboard iPhones, saying, get the subscription. So they really have worked out that even at key trading times, the most important thing to do is to get a digital connection with your customers. Because then you can start to work the value of that going forward. Most businesses do not advertise their digital connection enough. And they need to do that in order to... So when you're sitting in a restaurant, you should know that restaurant has an app. You should be encouraged to download the app while you're there and get it, you know, and that's the way you want to go forward. Most people don't do that yet enough.
Going forward, is most of the revenue growth going to be in transaction fees? Is that?
Not from existing customers. So if you think about the strategy of win, transact and deepen, how do we, so if you assume that, you know, the customers are well, this is a true fact, on average, in terms of our top 20 customers, they have 1.5 services from us. So plenty of room to growth. How do we get more revenue from those existing customers? We get them to take more products, or we get them to take more use cases. If it's a new product, there will both be an increase in license fee, because we charge a license for a new product, and transactions. If it's just a use case, so my example before of you may have taken a loyalty product, but you want to use it in a slightly different way. So for staff rewards, you're taking out a specific segment and using it in a slightly different way. That would be transactional growth. And then new customers is obviously license and transactions. So I don't think it's our strategy going forward. It is definitely against each of the different areas to win more customers, which affects both lines, as you describe. Transact is, Tim talked about the audience network. That is definitely a transactional growth. And then the deepen point is affecting both categories as well. So I know I've avoided the question slightly, but the strategy isn't in one area, it's against all three.
I think we believe that the pattern of the business will largely follow that slide that Lucy showed at the beginning. So, you know, it'll be a combination of implementation, license and transaction. And obviously with existing clients, it's again, you know, if we're building something new for them in order to do it, it could be implementation, license and transaction. So there's the split. But we are principally a transaction business.
So the fact that in 2018, the transaction fees were 44% of the total, and now they're 36%. So that doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. And the reason why you've had that shift is predominantly driven by these tier ones. So if you remember what I was saying around when customers go live, they've got an uplift in their license fee. Well, that uplift is significantly more for a tier one customer because we charge them for the support, the hosting and all that sort of jazz within the license fee, which is more, a more chunky sum compared to, say, an F&B client. So that's why you got that balance. But for me, it doesn't really matter so long as the recurring element overall is growing.
And Waitrose, are you expecting that to be a significant line of business?
Yes.
Okay.
We're classifying that as a tier one client for us going forward.
Just longer term, as the successful retailer implements decent systems themselves, so they're omnichannel properly, rather than split as they maybe at the moment, does that mean that they'll be doing this stuff themselves going forward? Why weren't their marketing department doing this themselves? They've got promotion departments, marketing departments, merchandising. You know, why wouldn't they be doing this themselves if their systems were in place properly?
I mean, I think the answer is some will. But, you know, this is quite specialist, the scale, the volumes, what we do. Historically, till providers have done some of this, and you work with your till providers, and that's how you do it. But you can't do real time. The till cannot take 150 million personalised offers. You know, so when businesses tell you that they're personalised, actually what they're saying is we've got a few segments. Yeah, and there is a big difference between having 8 segments of your customers and being genuinely personalised. And the big difference is you can change customer behaviour more for your investment because it's more personalised. So I think that, yes, some, but absolutely not all. The other thing is philosophical, you know, do we build or buy? And I think that actually, if you look at the business going forward, you know, you look, Tesco have dark warehouses. Marks and Spencers did a partnership with Ocado. There's increasingly more and more partnerships going on in order to compete in this new and and different world there has to be. And it's not, you know, it's whether it's in entertainment, whether it's in autonomous vehicles, you know, Daimler and Mercedes. I mean, you just look, every week businesses are sort of doing that in order to try and compete and wrestle with the digital age. And I think there's a massive part for a business like us in that. So I don't think... It may be.
I suppose for customers, very small amount of money as well for them, isn't it?
This? Correct. Yeah, that is also true. Well, yes, that is also true. Yes, yes. It's interesting, actually. It's not a lot of money, but it's one of the reasons that we deepen is you actually end up sitting at the heart of the operating system of customer management. If you want to do any, if Loblaw want to do anything with their customer, they need to route it through Eagle Eye. It's strategically very important, but as you say, it's not the biggest, certainly not their biggest investment.
Tim, Lucy, thank you very much.
Thank you. No, thanks very much for coming in.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.